Whoa, look, it's time to go viral. I'm homicidal, I'm killing all my rivals. I'm the man, shit, I put that on the Bible. I Spotify my target, cause you know I got the title. Hey, I'm a Mac too. I told baby shake that ass like she Apple. She said it's real, so she got my name tattooed. House full, so I hit it in the back room. Baby says she need it now, peep the urgency. I want a little Kim before she had the surgery. Leg spread on that hardcore poster. She love twerking, she just do it for the coach. Big dog, bull massive. Six tray Chevrolet, I'm classic. All these niggas mad at me, that's tragic. So main bitch in the bed, that's graphic. Yeah, we about to go viral. Hey, hey, hey. We about to go viral.
What's the deal, people? It's your boy, the one and only, your host that do the most, Mr. Vara himself. Coming at y'all with a very special episode. Got a special guest in the house.
Hey, Mr. Harvey Green, my father.
Go ahead and introduce yourself to the people, man.
Yes, I'm Harvey Green, father of the main man here.
We live and direct. Came out to North Carolina to pay him a surprise visit. He didn't even know I was coming. How you felt when you see me at the door?
So you at work or at home?
In traffic right now.
Oh, you off?
Yeah, I'm off. Matter of fact, let me call you right back.
Okay.
All right.
They look at you like, who is it? Hi. Is Harvey here?
Who?
Harvey?
Yes.
This is son, Chris.
You blow me to hell.
What's going on, man?
Man, I wasn't feeling rotten, but getting there.
No, you ain't heard about it. Said, man, we'll do a pop-up.
You ain't kidding. Come on in.
Yeah.
There's no Liberty there.
Yeah, I come see. She's excited.
Come out.
Man, I was shocked, I tell you. I got up, I wasn't feeling that great. Oh, in order to say, your son, see, I what? I just talked to him on the phone. But when I saw you, she said, my face lit up. I tell you what, it was bothering me left. Just that fast.
Yeah, when was the last time I seen you? About a decade ago?
Well, pretty soon it would be. It'll be 9 years this coming August.
Damn near 10 years. So this episode, I want to dedicate this to the vets because the story. So I wanted to catch a lot of your stories on camera, not only for me, but for your grandkids, for my kids. A lot of these stories they never heard. So why don't you tell the people a little bit about your upbringing first?
Well, I grew up, it was hard times back then. I never known my father. You know, the mother grew up going around, passing around from home to home, uncles and aunts. And I got tired of that. I was a homeless person for a long time. Be out on the streets, clothes was raggedy, and no money. And even got into sports, but because I was so poor, I couldn't do too much of that, but I walk around, and one day it had rained, and I was sitting out on this road, and I saw this old black Packard coming up a driveway, coming down the road. The road similar to this one out here. The guy stopped and said, boy, what you doing out here? I said, I'm sitting nowhere to go. He said, where you live? I said, nowhere. He said, come on, get in. That was a cool day. I got in that car. It was so nice and warm. He took me home with him, entered into his family. I started growing up with them. And one time they wanted to adopt me for good, and I said, no, I'm keeping my name Green. But he was a good guy and everything. You know, everybody had problems. Put me through school. Then I got out of school, running around, and got involved with a lot of things. being like a hit man and everything. Learned those ways. But then one day I was downtown Houston walking around. And Sam said, Uncle Sam wants you. I said, no, I tried everything. I'm going to try this. So I go in, talk to the recruiter. Sitting there, we talk, and he says, can I help you? I said, yeah, man, I want to join up. So we sit down and talk. He told me about this, doing the Vietnam War era then. So he's talking. He said, you take the test. So I took the test. At that time, all you need to score was 16 on called an amplitude battery test. He had a lot of other tests to take, but then I scored like 80-something on the test. He said, man, you can go to officer training school. I said, no, I don't do that. I want to be like you. I want to be a sergeant like you. So we kept talking and talking. He said, when you want to go? So I'm ready to go now. I said, you know, go tell your parents. I said, I have no parents. Just me. So we talked. Then he said, you think you tough? I said, I'm tough enough to take you out. He says, I have a place for you. I said, where? He said, a Green Beret Special Force. I said, where do I sign? Sure enough, signed up, stayed in a motel that night. I think about 4 o'clock that morning, they got us out. Took us to the airport, flew me out to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. It was cold there, it was snowing. And I mean, the drill sergeant came out with everything in these bags. We walked up, they dump out your bags. Everything we picked up, put it back in. So it was crazy. But then I got to liking it, because now I was already athletic. So after a while, you know, you have 6 weeks of training. Jump school, we did like 15 jumps a month. They do nowhere near that. And the chutes we had then were not the same type of chutes they have now. Chutes back then, you jump out, you land, you roll, and you fold your chutes up. So after 6 weeks of training, and they go, there was no AIT at that time. You go from there, you go straight to Vietnam. So we ended up on a plane, and up in New York, from New York, flying on to Germany, from Germany to Vietnam. You get there at the station, and they put you out on duty, say Saigon was the starting point. That was the capital then. We go there, and the next thing, my job was in the jungles. I was combat infantry all the way. First year went through the manual, talking about scared. I was scared because the enemy firing, you don't know where you're coming from. Trees were so thick, you couldn't see. And the jungles during the day, you get bitten by mosquitoes, you got ants to deal with, you got snakes to deal with.
How old was you at the time?
That time I was in Vietnam, I was 21.
How old was you? Time. So you enlisted at 21?
No, I enlisted. I was 20 when I enlisted.
You was 20?
21, I went on in. Because I told them right then and there, wait, they didn't have what you call, they have now delayed entrance program. And during the war, of course, they were hyping up because the draft was going on. I know about two or three of my cousins got drafted, so I volunteered. A couple of them didn't go to Vietnam, but two of them did go to Vietnam. The one was in the Marine Corps, another was in the Navy, another in the Air Force. I tell you, getting there, you meet people, man, you just met folks, and next thing you know, people dropping like flies around.
Yeah, that's deep. So just to backtrack, from a kid, he was homeless, somebody damn near adopted you, and from there, you enlisted due to no other option, or you just looked like the best option?
I was the best option, because at that time, see, I needed a square meal, they had a roof over my head, and the military provided that. Like I said, I was going around in the streets back in them days. It was cold out there, and you go to your relatives' home. You know, they had big families. They didn't have no room for you. I had a favorite uncle I stayed with for a while, and then he ended up dying. He had gone to Korea. He had a bullet enlarged in his heart. Well, close to his heart, he couldn't move. It was an accident, and that bullet moved and killed him. So then that would left me without anything. So I'll go around everybody's house and give you a meal. But for living and staying like that, no.
How was you able to fend for yourself before you joined the military? Like, because I know the streets is different now. It's different ways.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I was out there. You know, you learn the ways of the street. Become mean. You see, back then, the only thing was going on in those days, people were selling drugs. And you go to clubs. They didn't call them clubs. They didn't call them, like, juke joints, stuff like that. You get into fights. But you also meet people you hang out with. Some folks like you, some don't. But you're getting backed down from nobody. And back then, you fought fear. If a guy whooped me, fine. But if he didn't, you go bragging about it, I'm going to get you then. That's just the way it was, you know. And we were drinking, had a good time. I've seen guys drinking. Like I was telling Dorothy, I think, about last week about these two old winos. You saw them all day. They've been drinking together. And over a little bottle, one of them shot and killed the other one. And you're laying out there, you see people dying right and left. But then when I'm in Vietnam, you see bodies, people just talking to. Just laying there, guys are dead. You know, you look, you say, well, when am I next? So then you went in your mind, hey, if I'm going to go, I got a 50-50 chance of dying or surviving. So if I'm going to go, I'm taking a lot of these out with me. But the thing about it, you didn't know who you was fighting. Because communism was coming through. And the bottom line is, you know, north and the south. So when we captured Vietnamese, after being there for a while, because they had, like, I'm on the ground, and shots coming from you, you don't know where they're coming from. Trees were thick. They had snipers. They had young girl snipers. They had young babies, I would call them, coming up, running to the camp, just pull a grenade and kill any GI they can get. One time we were celebrating Christmas, man, with only 5 minutes, and I'll hit the deck. So there was a young Vietnamese kid running through there and pulled his belt and exploded.
So they had y'all fighting kids, and y'all didn't even know.
Well, we knew afterwards. But see, they were called, at that time, they used them for suicide. They were suicide missions, like kamikazes, pilots, and everything.
Damn, they using kids as suiciders? Suicide bombers? That's crazy.
And young girls in the tree, and they were good, too. They were picking us off. The guys like smoking marijuana and stuff. Well, T-shirts was white. So you fire up a match, boom, they pick you off.
Yeah, because I know nowadays, the Vietnam vets, they got a lot of bad press. Like, oh, they're baby killers, they're kid killers. But they don't know these kids are trying to kill you.
When I came back first time in California, right in San Francisco, they calling us baby killers, murderers. With all these clowns back here protesting, we fighting a war for these clowns are protesting. They don't know what was going on. They blaming us. They see the news. Yeah, the baby's getting killed. But how many GIs are getting killed? They were body bags coming back all over the place. You can see back then the train stations were different. You see a lot of these things out there with the wheel with caskets on. So I got so mad up there before Fort Ord, they were throwing eggs. And when they hit me, I said, man, if I had my mom, I'd blow these clowns away. Then you start drinking, and you know, we didn't appreciate it. The war wasn't appreciated. Even though John F. Kennedy was going to end the war, he wasn't going to say, no, he had just completed the Cuban Missile Crisis with Fidel Castro. But the Republicans want a war. When a war comes, they make money. They make money. Who do you think going? We're the ones going to the front line. They're not going out there. You have a lot of them clowns that are in politics now. People like Donald Trump, when they come up, burn their draft card. He never served in a war. And yet he called people talking about they were losers and everything because they died.
That's deep.
But he don't understand people dying right. The equipment we had then is nothing compared to what they have now. Everything was really solid. I remember when President Carter was president, when he came out to visit us at Fort Hood, and we showed him. At that time, we had metal-seeking shells can go through metal. We took an old tank and fired it, and that's when he first saw that. But Carter was a good president, though. But Nixon was a rotten president.
So just to backtrack a little for the people that might be lost, you was actually in Vietnam. You actually fought in the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah.
What was the exact infantry that you was, or branch of military you was in?
Army. Yes, Army. When that was the first time I was attached to the 1st Cavalry Division. Attached means we support them. And then we're moving up, because I started in the jungles, moving up north, the Mekong Delta and everything. But then you're fighting through the jungles, and you ask for air support. Sometimes you couldn't get it because of the clouds so bad from the bombardments, the overcast smoke and everything. So you had to fight more than just the enemy. You had to fight the elements as well. Mm. Like I said, they have snakes, man. I've first time I've seen a snake that huge. I've never seen a snake that big before.
Like anacondas?
Anaconda snakes, python snakes, hanging out the tree. Like I said, once we would come to this village, And one had killed this little Vietnamese woman. She must have come out to get wood or whatever. When we got there, half her body was already in him. So all we did was set him on fire and burn him up right there and kept going.
When you set him on fire with?
We, at that time, we were shooting flamethrowers. That's all we had. It's a white chemical comes out. Once it hits, it ignites. And that's what we would use when we shoot into the underground tunnels that Viet Cong's had. So when you shoot somebody, you don't know where they're coming from. And you look at the ground, you don't know. So that's why a lot of us dying fast. We didn't understand that first.
And guerrilla warfare, what they call it.
That's what it was. That was the real war. This stuff nowadays is not.
How was the training back then compared to today? Like training, I mean, today is like no hazing.
Training better was great back then because you fought and because you know hand-to-hand combat if necessary. And you fought because you threw grenades back then. You didn't have a grenade launcher. We had a bazooka. It's a mounted on your shoulder that fires out both ends. But the training was 100% better then because you made real soldiers back then. Like I said, the military policed itself back then. There were no civilians. Everything in the military happened, stayed in the military. And we ran everything. Nowadays, you train these guys coming in now, it's like a Boy Scout thing. A lot of them go just to get money to go to school. Some of them come out, oh, my back hurts, man. They get benefits for it. Vietnamese, the veteran, Vietnamese veteran, the old Army veterans, we the hardest one to get anything. For years, guys going through, even when Reagan was president, Reagan denied a lot of veterans their benefits because they were like, wasn't 100%.
Yes, a lot of vets, actually Vietnam vets that's down on Skid Row.
Exactly.
You wouldn't know they vets. You just looking at them like they bums and thinking they drug addicts. Yeah. You don't know they done fought in the war and got denied benefits and out on the street.
Exactly. And now you look at the people, they take care of everybody nowadays. Like I said, you had rations, you get wounded, or if a soldier died, then you take his Red Cross kit because he can't use it anymore. There are times we'd be behind bodies dodging bullets and everything. You get caught in the clearings, they cut you down. Mm. We had the Huey choppers bring in. I had one buddy, he used to be on the chopper. He'd be so high, he shot up the floor of the chopper.
Yeah. Oh, what?
He shot up the floor of the chopper, he'd be so high.
What was he high on?
Oh, all that stuff with it, most marijuana and methadone, anything he got. Because like I say, marijuana grew up there. It grew up like in the grass. You're like, oh, I didn't know I'm lighting marijuana. They think, yeah, they pick it up and got it, rolling it up and smoking it. That strong odor, you knew what it was. And I've gotten contacts from him. I didn't realize until he told me that's what it was. Got lightheaded, laughing, acting crazy, shooting. And one time I was shooting, I shot from the bottom of the tree all the way up. Then I heard something howling at the ground. I knew I hit it then. But then there's a lot of time we were pinned down. We was calling for air support and couldn't get it. And we had to fight. But the worst thing was night fire. You couldn't see at night. I mean, you'd see people walking on landmines, exploding, hit bombardment everywhere. So maybe my own artillery shell comes in and hit us. We don't know.
So you done been walking and the guy next to you just blow up?
Yeah. Yeah, he blows up. If you take the point, he steps on land. Didn't take much. You step on it. When you pick your foot up, you trigger it. That's it. And people behind you will get hit, too, from the fragments. That's how I got this scar here from the hot metal that hit me there. But then you hit the deck. It's still coming around. The explosion's coming in. It's not the blast kills. It's the fragments from it. Mm. And then sometimes you make booby traps made out of nails, fertilizer, and all kinds of stuff with all this gunpowder in. Then they also made pits, like I was saying, pits sticking up. And a lot of Charlie forgot they were there because a lot of them died and they fell in.
Yeah, I've seen some of the booby traps. It's like a pit they dug out. When your foot go in, when we try to pull it out, it's a bunch of nails and razors and just tear your whole fucking leg apart.
Yeah, bro, you see somebody, you see boots flying in the air, legs over here, half a body's over there. So it is bad, especially when you get pinned down and artillery coming in and you can't move. like a lot of Marines on Hill 881. We'd go rescue those Marines up there with two big 50 caliber machine guns. We come from the other end, ease up on you, throw a grenade in and get down, blows up. And that saves them. They made a lot of movies that they called Pork Chop Hill. Frank Clint Eastwood made one. But a lot of stuff, those things weren't as realistic as Platoon was. Platoon showed everything. When I watched that movie, I knew exactly where it was. And I had those flashbacks that night. I couldn't see it anymore. I couldn't watch that movie today was on.
So out of all the historic Army movies, Platoon is the most realistic.
Platoon is the most realistic. And there was a movie made by the Marines. The Marines were a year back in the, I don't know what, the 60s or early 70s, called Beach Red. That was a movie that's really stupid, most of the Marines. And how the enemy was wearing out uniforms and fooling people. And these two guys that played, they were carrying, dropped the line, and they reported back and told them about where it was on the beach, but they was holding our uniforms, and we sent fighters in. But see, everything, it's bad. I mean, it's so war. It's a different story. You're talking about hell.
So how was it back then dealing with the racism in the Army, you being black?
We were separated. There was parts of the military base where blacks would be on and the white soldiers on the other side. But I tell you what, though, you can ask any soldier back in that day was a pilot or something like that, or a grunt, which we call ourselves grunts, a ground troop. They would tell you they'd rather be with black soldiers, right, than there, because we know how to fight. We know how to fight, but there were some, like I said, prejudiced officers. You know, it's pretty prejudiced, everybody above you. And it was hard for a black man to rank. Because I know when I was up for a promotion, I knew I was better than the guy, but they gave it to him. So when people said they'd never been racist, because that is a lie. Racism has been always been, and still goes on. And some of the northern states have it in housing, cars, and jobs, and salaries. So my rank took me a long time to rank. Well, people rank fast, just like that. Nowadays, this military, you can rank. You go to college, you come out, and E3. You know, let's go to college. You come in, you E3 right there on top. And your pay will be more than mine.
That's crazy.
But they didn't know. I always had a bunch of pencil. I call them officer. No, they're doing their pencil. They're penciling. They sit behind a desk. They sit there. Now, I don't know if you ever watched Combat. Combat was World War II, was fighting against Germany and everything. That's a lot of realistic, too, but it's Hollywood. But the bottom line is, war, anybody that's been in war, there's a lot of guys came back totally messed up. As a matter of fact, Dorothy had a co-worker that her brother just died back here, what was it, a week or two ago?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, and he was messed up from combat.
Yeah, a lot of the vets that I've seen who've been in Vietnam, they're not in their right mind. How was you able to keep your sanity?
Because I drink gin.
Gin kept you sane?
Gin kept me, yep. I drink gin. But see, I was crazy. They called me. Look, we called the Big Red One.
They called you what?
Big Red One.
That's so they gave you a nickname.
Yeah, they gave out a nickname. My nickname was local. but the unit we called Big Red One, because we took all the daredevil job. Wherever it was, we was on the point. We moved in. We found the landmines. Everything. Anything was up front, we was out there. Because in the wartime, be honest about it, the ones to go on the front line, blacks, Hispanics. And the first ones on the front line.
So they send y'all first.
Exactly. We're going to stop a bullet. You were nothing but a hired assassin in the military. That's all you was during wartime. And all these politicians, they want to send, keep a war going, but I guarantee they don't send any of their family members over.
None of their kids, none of their grandkids.
All the people on that's out there, they draft. The draft was wrong. A lot of guys went to Canada, burned the draft cards, and stayed away.
So all the toughest jobs, the most dangerous jobs, they sent doctors.
We out there to get it. That's right.
So in a war like Vietnam, how do you get a nickname like Loco? Because I know the people's like, hold on, how the hell do you get a name like
because
that?
They gave it because I was crazy. Didn't they come up? I didn't care. I'm going to take it. Like, if for instance, like we know the terrain is rough over here, it's jungle. Like, who's going to go first? If they tell me to get around, let's go. We go in. Well, if I get it, you know what happened. But the bottom line is, though, The life expectancy in a wartime of an infantry soldier less than 18 hours. 18 hours, you're going to be replaced. So guys, a lot of guys were shooting themselves to get out of the war. They'd never been away from home. They'd be crying and going on, but see, I wasn't taking the cowardly way out. Because all my life, I'd never been a cow, been a fighter. If I started something, I'm going to finish it. One way or the other, I'm going to finish it. And a lot of guys, there were guys, I didn't know anything about religion back then or nothing. All I knew, there was a God. And if he take me, then I'm gone. But I'm taking a lot with me. I didn't know anything about cow. You see a guy, he's being crossing his heart. I said, man, what the hell? What are you doing? And he was talking about rosaries and all that. I know nothing about that.
So the first day you left training and they sent you out on that battlefield, what was your thoughts the first day you...
Oh, scared, I couldn't see. Because I'm used to fighting what I can see. You know, you see guys falling around, you dying. Well, they tell you, you know, the officer tell you, you know, some of you going to make a career of this. Some of you not going to come back. Some of you going to come back mean. Some of you going to get out. So at that time, I didn't pay no attention to the officer. Look, but when you heard getting close to the zone, man, where combat is, you hear the explosions and everything, the rat-tat-tat, the machine guns, and you started thinking in. But then when you're out there, you really hit it. When that UA chopper lands and you get off of it, you running, bullets flying all around you. Because you have a space, they land the chopper in, and you hit it for the woods. Some guys didn't make it. And then when it was then you set fires and everything because you smell the dead body. Look at them all mutilated out there from the sun. Yeah, like 130-degree days, and at nighttime, it's raining, and it's cold, and monsoon rain comes in, and that's when mosquitoes have a little blast with all other kind of insects. I had never seen an ant that huge before. Like a red-looking ant, and he gets you in bad shape. Then they had huge spiders and everything. He had, like I say, snakes growing, other wild animals going through. So a lot of times, because of the bombardment, the animals are scattering, but not the snakes.
Was there any moment you thought, like, this is it? Like, I'm about to die right now?
Oh, yeah. Many times we were peering down and people died. I said, well, you keep yourself. Well, when is your time? When are you going to go? You want about that, but you got to keep on. You give up. That's when you get it. Because, like I said, you at nighttime is the worst time. We didn't have all this night gear they had. We had what you call tracers. So when we fire, you look for the rat-tat. And where your tracer's going, you know where they're shooting from. So you just fire it out wild, anywhere. Some guy put the weapon on a mat. I kept mine on single. Because you can fire out your rounds. We had them rounds, Cliff Magazine, we had then would only carry like 15 rounds.
Dang, 15 rounds?
15 rounds, you change it. And then you got to look for gas. Sometimes you got to be ready for gas. So you have a gas mask. The only equipment you have on you, you have your M16, you have a gas mask, your C-ration, your first aid kit, which was nothing but a little Band-Aid or something, you get hit, that's it. But if a person dies, you take his, you pull his kit out, and get armor belt around. But you're moving on, because they have funeral details come up later on for the GI body, wore dog tags. So if you die, your dog tag, they put it in your mouth so they know it is.
Damn. Yeah, I remember one story you was telling me you thought y'all was cooked. It was over with. And you said God sent the wild hog to save y'all.
Well, we was on this patrol. It was like five of us. So we were coming through. There's rice paddies on both sides. You don't go on a rice paddy because there's no more water. You know how deep the water is? Or is it quicksand or what? Or animals in. So it's a little road. So we coming through. It's five of us. We're just making our way back to our zone. But then you hear this big Russian UA tank coming behind you. It makes a lot of noise. You can hear it. There's a tree there. And you see this huge snake, the tree bending over. He's up there. He spotted us. And that mouth opened up like that big hiss, like a head like that. And we stop and look at the thing looking at us. Now, if we shoot him, we give our location up. But because the tank was getting closer, and somehow, I'm telling you, like I said, that I wasn't a religious person, but God sent a wild hog. That bull hog came out, that snake dropped on him, wrapped around. There was a tug of war going in front of the hog and that snake. So I said, let's go. I walked through, I'm curious. I put my hand on that snake, the muzzle was so tight. Next thing you know, when we got through, they spotted us. They fired around. Boom! And then the bottom line, it hits right where we was. And we looked back. The tree was gone. The hog and the snake wasn't lifted. So then he would have gotten us too. But he knew we were there because they was coming. That these winds was roaring. So we cut off to the right.
So what was going through your head? You see a giant damn anaconda with a head about as big as your body, and behind you was a tank.
First I thought about taking a grenade, pulling it up in, and tossing it to get it. But then it was because the tank hadn't seen us yet. But while I was standing talking about what's going on, then the bottom line is, I say, hey, we got to do something. Somebody, let's go. But out there came a wild hog, had them big tusks, and they were a big hog, too. And then the snake dropped on him, wrapped around him, and he pulling the snake, tightening up, and the hog pulling. Somebody said, let's go. We went. And I just had to be done, touch that snake like that with this hand, never forget. And the muscle was so tight, and the hog grunting and pulling. And soon we got away, they fired around and landed right there on that hog, snake, wiped everything out. Well, they knew we were there, but where we went, the tank couldn't go because it was off the tracks. So we got up into the jungles. As we're going through the jungles, and you see more snakes. So, man, what are we going to do now? And I said, well, all that we can do is shoot them because either this is where we're going to lay down here or we're going to fight till the end. Because Daniel, Charlie was coming the way, meeting us too. They started firing on us. We hit the deck. We called for support, air support. Couldn't get the air support. So you had to do the best you can, shoot. And we were as trained, we maneuvered around. So we put like, we would call it crossfire. So some staying there and fighting while we maneuver around behind them. We got behind them, we threw grenades. About the same time, all of them exploded. You hear my nothing. Then we started shooting, and the guys in front came on in, and we just wiped them out.
That's like something out of a damn movie.
That's the way it is. But in the jungle, see, a lot of people didn't fight in the jungle. Some fall on the beach, like around there, you get the Mekong Delta, the water. Like we're moving up to Cambodia, where all the fighting was really going on. But all the branch of service had a different. Marines were mostly near the Mekong Delta side. The Navy was out there, Southeast Asia, in the ocean. So they were firing in rockets back then. The rockets back then, we called them what's the name of it? Because that was my secondary MOS, Hercules missiles. They were firing Hercules missiles in. I never used my secondary MOS, always the first one, which was combat. And I was in Bravo unit. We got Alpha, Bravo, Delta, Charlie, and that was it. And then sometimes you get them F-50 fighters coming along, fighting everything. They would drop the B-52s, be dropping bombs, you get the location. So, but it was, I tell you, though, many times you think about, man, especially at night, you guys walking away, they go use the restroom and step on a landmine, blown away. And you tell them that because your squad leader tell them, like some guys just come in, replace others, you tell them, don't get away from them. We'll get you out here, stay close. They wouldn't listen, see. A lot of times, a white soldier wouldn't want to take a black soldier's word, so he wouldn't know. They get shot or blown up.
So you tell a white soldier, hey, man, you need to stay close. You say, hey, fuck you. You don't know what you're talking
about. He tells him, and then he goes out, get blown away. But see, squad leaders we were, which means I have my section of men and somebody else have their section. So we know, we done been there, so we tell you what's going on. But you're the night firing the bombs and everything. And you know what? Next time they hit, they're going to hit hard. Because they know they got you pinned down, so they're going to hit hard. They stay low. Don't get up. Some clowns hold the head up and they get taken off. Because sometimes you gotta crawl prone down on your belly and just crawl, keeping your head down. You got a hard helmet on and your helmet liner. Now, the only way you can clean up, you use that hard helmet on the top. That's what you wash up in when you get a chance. A lot of times we didn't get a chance to wash up. Sometimes in the river, man, we're uniform for years, sweaty, you stink in there, you smell like a rat.
Damn, so what was the feeling? You get off, I'm fresh 21, you just enter battle, and you get your first kill.
Oh, the first kill didn't bother me.
No?
No, it didn't bother me because, like I say, I grew up on the streets. I've seen people die. But that comments on a different situation. But the first kill, I said, well, I got that, such and such. So then you start shooting. It becomes natural to you then because you know either he's going to get you or you're going to get him. Somebody's going to get hit. And that's why I didn't agree with them when they were talking about when Pat Tillman died, they said friendly fire. Somebody shot him because, number one, you're in a combat zone. You always stay each other. You got my back. I got your back. We know each other's up. If you're moving forward, everybody stays in shot of one another. Nobody's behind. Because your job is just as most important as my job. If one person blows it, all of us can die. So you got to watch out. The point man has to watch out. And we moving in. Whatever, you're looking for everything. Sometimes you miss up in the tree. You'll know it when they fire on you.
Yeah, because I hear a lot of guys say, they first killed. Throwing up, they having nightmares. You say it was nothing.
No, but you see, everybody, some of the guys never had, they never been around. Like I was. I grew up, I've seen people die. I fought people that, seen people cut up and bleed. Some folks couldn't stand the sight of blood.
So before you got to the Army, you was already been in combat.
I'm already tough, yeah. That's why they made me a squad leader. Because when I got in boot camp, my drill sergeant's name was Pavsky, Woodley, and Grant. And doing base training, they named, because I was athletic too. And they named me a squad leader. And they said, you're going to make it. You're going to be good if you stay in. I swear I made it. I didn't think about that then. But in Vietnam, all that comes. All your training comes, including when you're from the streets. You know, it's similar to street fighting. But on this way, you don't see when you're fighting. Unless you've been on the ring. And that's when the hand-to-hand combat comes in then. So you got your bayonets. You fight with that. When you're charging each other, man, people die right then and there. I remember when I hit Charlie with my bayonet, just came up and ripped him. One of my buddies cut the guy's heart out. Held it up on his bayonet like that with his heart.
You had his heart on your knife?
Not me. I just took my whole weapon up and they whipped in and whipped up on him. I just split him up.
Well,
he mutilated him. But then, see, we know there's a lot of war crimes going on there. A lot of war crimes. I'll be honest about it. But you don't think about that. They were doing war crimes against us. Now, we overkill. It's true. And they were talking about bring them back. I said, man, these clowns kill each other. Bring them. None of these sons are So we captured some of them. They killed them because they were torturing our people.
Yeah.
Especially the ones in them POW camps. They were being tortured every day. And they take away, we called it where McCain was, we called that Hanoi Hilton.
John McCain.
Yeah, where John McCain was. Well, he got shot down. And then I think he hurt that leg or something like that, but he was in there. And then when we kept moving around, but my unit, when he was released, I think the war was ending then. But during the heavy times of the war, though, it was something that people died, so that's why they were drafted.
Damn, so, because I know now, like, they like to, like, a lot of the vets who do interviews, they talk about their kill counts, like 33 confirmed. Are you guys keeping kill counts, or are you just catching so many bodies that did you lost count?
No, we didn't count. Other people come back and count, but we knew. Because when they come up, you see the dead Americans out there, and then you sell the Vietnamese. That's how they get the kill count. Because they're like we hit a squad of 50, and we kill them all. So that's in Section 8. We done killed 50. But they were moving on up. We're going on up northward. You might run into 550. And then you outnumbered. So you calling for backup, your radio for backup, at the radio, I call for backup. Your backup is not there right away. You got to fight. I mean, one time, man, I was down to my last row of shells. I said, now this is it. You know then you're going to die. So, but you keep fighting. But right then and there, always they came through for us. Usually the Air Force come in, them fighter jets, and they cut loose. Well, then they drop us supplies in. Like once a month. And I used to tell them, everybody else one day, they'd smoke marijuana. And I told them, drop me some gin. That's right.
Just give me some gin.
I had gin. That's what keeps your sanity.
Yeah.
See, a lot of guys, I was probably going crazy running him thinking I didn't smoke, but them guys were smoking. But you had to do something because all the time you turn around, death. We used to take our bodies and set them up and set them on fire and stack them up.
Damn, so do you remember your kill count or you just lost count?
No, I lost count. I didn't keep count. I just know I was firing to save my life and some of my comrades' life. So when you're in the heavy fire, you're not counting. Because a lot of times you don't know if you hit somebody or not. Especially when you are flat down, you're firing from the prone position. Sometimes just grass there, you hide behind the grass. So you don't get seen, like on the road. If we take a break, you always watch the road. You face out toward the road. But like I said, you got to worry about the elements too. Sometimes you get in a doggone impala. And them huge spiders, man, they were different colors. Spider, they bite you. But when you combat, a lot of times they forget about you in combat.
Yeah.
They forget, yeah. They forget. You need supplies. It take days for you to get.
So they send you out there and forgot they sent you out there.
They don't care. As long as you stop a bullet, that's all they care about. They don't care about you once you get in. They'll tell you that you're on your own. Your other comrade, you make friends, though. You get friends. Sometimes you get guys, like a lot of guys from the States, whether they're from your home or not. That's where the word blood comes from. We start calling this blood. You're American. We're blood. We watch out for one another. You can be from Arkansas, Mississippi, even them racist states. And then the brothers, the black guys, you know, you're blood in America because a lot of the Hispanic guys, they were blood too. They're in the same uniform. So when you fight in the war, anybody, they forget about that prejudice stuff you grew up with. Your life depends on each other.
So they come in racist.
And leave out.
Bodies start dropping, and now y'all brothers now.
We brothers.
That's deep.
So we started calling each other blood. That's where the phrase blood comes from.
Yeah, that's crazy, because that's a gang terminology now.
Right. Because blood now, they mean blood.
Yeah, blood gang, yeah.
But to us back then, blood was, yeah, we from the same hometown or this state, or we all from the United States. Because then we had, like, you know, we had allies, too. You had British fighting. You had the Australians fighting. And then we didn't have no Germans, though, but we had a lot of the other allies there, too.
How did they view y'all, Vietnamese?
The black soldiers, the Vietnamese, didn't want to kill us, but we caught some. And he looked at us and said, we don't fight you. Your skin not white. Why you fight? We don't. I said, yeah, but we're the same uniform.
So they didn't even look at y'all like enemies.
No. It was the white man was the enemy. Now that we were in the uniform, so a lot of us died. A lot of us died, a lot of us didn't die. But they didn't care. See, communism, it's like a day. They know white men lie. They know it. But the bottom line is, though, when you're fighting, you took an oath to the Constitution. You swore to uphold the Constitution and the flag. And you will give your life if you have to. That's what an infantry soldier is. He's just another number out there. If you come back, it's great. You die, they can bring you back one way or the other, body back. A lot of guys was in the burn. I mean, some of them were so burned so bad, their wives were sending their wedding rings back. In the burn ward, a lot of guys. And the nurses was good. And a lot of nurses was crying. A lot of these, well, young men dying like that. A lot of them in tanks. Some of them, when the planes go down, they get burned so bad. Well, I remember the nurses, they were good, too. Because we carried guys in there in those mass units. And they had things, man, I mean, it was bad. Guys burned so badly, you can hardly recognize it. And a lot of people were married. That's why I said I wouldn't get married. Bottom line is, a lot of guys' wives sent their rings back to them. They couldn't handle it.
Did you get shot out there, or was you able to?
I got wounded. I didn't get shot. I got, like I said, a lot of shrapnel, like my side all around here with shrapnel here. It was so hot. That's why I was in the mass unit for a while. That they gave me some stitches. But when they said, you go right back into combat. So you might be out of combat for a day or two, then they take you going right back to your unit.
Stitch you up, give you some jams, guys, back
it.
Out there.
They gave me that some morphine. That's why I can't stand morphine today. They fix you up. You good. Hey, you can still block a bullet. So you good enough. But guys were shooting themselves so bad. Them ones saying that was, they couldn't handle it. They were crying, never been away from home from the mothers.
So me, guys were shooting themselves shooting to themselves get out.
Just to get out.
To not fight no more.
Right.
That's deep. I see. I never heard that. That's crazy.
And a lot of them was the white soldiers doing it. Shoot themselves and get out. The war is over for them. Now, if you get wounded, like guys got legs blown off, arms taken off. Yeah, like we're seeing talking now. Like I tell you, I know, like that day when these cops, all of them out here, when they look for those things, I saw these different agencies. Man, like I'm back in Vietnam. That was all over the place. I looked out there and one knock on the door and Libby ran out his nice dog. He told about these two, something looking for him. I said, okay, fine. But then I heard one of the cops say, I don't think he worried about it. He said, I have a veteran there. I said, well, no, I'm not worried about it. Come up here. You can come back and drag him out. But it's just, oh, man, I mean, I was scared a long time. I ain't telling a lie, but I wasn't scared.
Yeah.
Especially at night, because you can't see where you're going. And then you're walking and walking like a leaf hits you. A lot of times, you know, we'll drop in this chemical down that kills the foliage. And you think that's rain. And that's what happened to my eyes a lot, too, because they were dropping the Agent Orange. Our people was doing that. And that's to kill the leaves and everything. And when your leaf hits you, you're wiping your face like that. A lot of guys got shingles, hives, cancer, all kind of stuff.
So our government, we dropping Agent Orange on our own.
And they deny it all the time. They deny it. For a long time, they deny it. That's why it took so long for Vietnam veteran to get anything. And Ronald Reagan knew this. And all these guys, and you see on Skid Row, they were 80% disabled. He cut everybody off. Just chop it off. And that's why that clown no good either. Him and Nixon, they were no good.
Yeah, because you guys were villainized, but the Afghanistan vets, they were like heroes in the media. So how did y'all feel about the media? How they painted y'all like villains?
Oh, we knew they were lying because they weren't there. I think the only one was telling the truth was Walter Cronkite. He was telling the truth about how many casualties, how many people killed. They showed people on the news like somebody, a lot of people were glued to the set every day to find out what's going on. No, they weren't getting the truth. And they lied. The military lies. The news was lying. And I can remember many times, man, we was up there because when the news people, they had news people following us around too. And a lot of them was killed. They were right in the heart of it. We tried to tell them to stay down. They went through the news. And these guys get blown away too. But you know, being in the jungles all the time is like your home, man. You know the soil. You say, well, I mean, I never see American soil again. You get used to that.
Damn.
And you're dirty. Man, you're dirty. You're tired. You're wet. You're hot. You're so sweaty. None of the mosquitoes love to sweat.
How many years total did you serve?
I served exactly 26 years, 2 months, Damn. 6 days, 13 hours, and 21 seconds.
And how much of that was in live combat?
Oh, twice. That would be 24 months that went back. I volunteered to go back. Not after I came home, I went back about a year or two later.
So you went one term,
12 months. One term months. I was sent over there for 12 months. See, actually 13 months.
You made it out alive.
I made it out alive.
Come back.
I volunteered to go back.
What made you want to go back?
Because, you know, you think, man, a lot of comrades I left over there, they're still fighting. But see, the first time, I made it back without a scratch. But they called me local. I was crazy. I made it back without a scratch. I didn't do a state. So I signed up, no, I'm going to go back to Vietnam. So I went back. And that's when, in combat again, a lot of the shrapnel started hitting me there from exploding. And a lot of it from our artillery. But that time, I thought, no, that's it. I'm not going back anymore. I think I'm pushing the button too much now.
So when you came back, was it hard to adjust to regular life?
Yes.
It was like, nah, I got to come back.
It was hard because you want to kill people. People calling you murderers and everything. I mean, you know, you come in uniform, people calling you a murder baby killer. I want to grab them by the neck and just wring their necks. Because like I told them, dude, look, you going what the news media tell you. You're not fair. Why don't you go over there and see how it is? See, all these people doing that talking protest, and daddy going, they wouldn't have made it. They don't know what war is, a different world. They see stuff on television. That's not the real deal. You see somewhere God had a good time, and that's not true. When they took me out of combat, Saigon was the capital, and that's where the black market was. Then you get out, you stay there till your orders come in. And it's like, you know, you're going around the city and they had the prostitutes and all this stuff. But you get a little bit, you know, I had a jacket I brought back, and I don't know what happened to that thing. I brought it home. Everybody started wearing it, and that was it. I hadn't seen it again. It was a jacket with all the areas on in Southeast Asia. But you come back, people calling all these names, man, you fighting for these clowns. I said, man, I'm sticking my life up for somebody like this.
Yes, so how did it feel to go fight for the country, risk your life?
I wanted to go. I wanted to go.
No, but you come back and then...
That's what I'm saying. We weren't treated with no respect.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You still, the racism is still going on.
Still going on.
Fought for the country.
Well, treat at Fort Ord, Jane Fonda was on protest. People throwing rotten eggs at us. One of them hit me right on the uniform. Now look, that's man, for I blow these clowns on. They talking about baby killers, murders, this. I said, wait a minute. We go over there and fight for this. People dying for this. And in your Vietnam, oh man, that was your Vietnam veteran. You see a Vietnam veteran? That was like poison there. But you fighting all these people to protest back here and call you all these names. And we were not respected. Look at these guys when they went over to Afghanistan, they come back, oh, they're heroes. They don't do nothing. That's not your conventional war, what they're doing. You got machinery pinpoints where everything is. The non-conventional warfare, we were the ones pinpointing. Yeah. But the only thing I hate about this way they do all this automatic stuff now, because all you got to do is get the cold, cut them off. You have nothing. Your non-conventional warfare becomes like a guerrilla warfare, which is our thing. We had to find it. We had to go out there and search and find it.
So it was no drones. It was
no
night vision goggles. No, y'all were the night vision goggles, basically.
That's it. We didn't have that. We didn't have, you know, the rations were like them old peanut butter and jelly and little crackers in little green cans. You didn't get no hot meal. Like people getting hot meals nowadays. Shoot, man, you can numb that stuff. And when your ration goes, sorry, you got to wait. Then you learn to eat off the land and everything, too.
Eat off the land.
Berries. You got the berries or whatever else, something you can eat. A lot of times you boil some type of weed together to eat.
Damn. But
yeah, there were dinner times, man. Then you so far up in the jungles, you couldn't get any reinforcement, anything like that. So you live there. You live in that area. Then, like I said, nighttime, combat is bombarded everywhere. You can hear Charlie, man, all over the place. You can't see him, but you can hear him. Somebody might walk up on one of them. But then night fire, and I hated that because you didn't know what's what then. Anybody can die then because you shoot it where you think the sound is coming from. And we had tracers. So the tracers, you hit somebody, you know you got them. All that trace was a bullet that has the light, when the light hits, it explodes.
Mm.
But they were firing out a tree, and the tree was so thick you couldn't see.
So you just fire, just hoping you hit something.
Hoping to hit something. You know where the sound is coming from. If it's coming from the tree, you fire up there, you just spray it, fire up until you get something. Sometimes the ground, like as we didn't know it was under the ground, they hold up, fire at you, go back down. But they had little openings where the grass and everything's on top. You walking over them. So finally, I guess how we discovered that somebody stumbled one time. And we saw the thing move. And that's how we found out they were on the ground. So we started shooting flamethrowers and setting them up. But they had like an ant farm. You shoot in there, that's somewhere over there somewhere.
So, yeah, I seen that in the movie Platoon, that they'll pop up. You think they're here, then they back over there?
Back over there somewhere.
So that was real.
Oh, that's real. And that's how we found out about it. Then we started, every hole we started getting to, we started shooting flamethrowers in. So we spray everybody out. You get to one, we search the ground. Sometimes they have trees covered over. But your life is in your hand. Like I said, the life expectancy of every soldier less than 18 hours back then. You know crazy. Somebody's going to die before the day's over, the night's out. Somebody's going to die.
So you making friends, and then end of the day, he's gone.
Yeah, you don't want, that's why sometimes it's hard to make friends, man, because some guy you just met, man, you get in a conversation, boom, he's blown away. Or you blown away. But then, you know, a lot of these guys, say there, a lot of guys then was afraid because they never been away from home. One guy, black guy, man, he came, I think he was from Oregon someplace, had both his legs blown off. He said, I used to run up and down the stairs from what apartment they live in. Now you can't do that. I mean, it's both legs, but we just grabbed them and pulled it back. Both legs were gone.
Damn, so what's the highest rank you made?
E8, Master Sergeant.
Oh, so you made it to the top?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I made Sergeant in Vietnam. I went over there, E nothing. Came back, I was E5. So that time, that was a Sergeant. And like they brought the Vietnam Wall around L.A., California back in the late 80s, right there off Marine, that park there by the Lawndale School. And we look at the wall, saw a lot of names I knew there. Hey. A lot of names. I said, man, I could have been on this wall. That's the smallest. They got the big one. I don't know if you guys saw me. You said Washington, the Vietnamese wall up there. That was the main wall. Then they started making portable ones, carrying it around. A lot of guys on there were sergeants, PFCs, privates, mostly sergeants, and the weirder ones in the combat. Officers weren't too many.
So is that, because you said before you went in, you wasn't religious. After you got out, that's when you became religious?
After I got out of the Army, because...
How was that transition back into society?
Well, the thing about it, I was fine. But see, and then, I mean, you remember George, all my buddies from the church. We went to see Platoon. Platoon came out. So we're sitting there. I'm fine watching the movie. I said, man, this is Saigon, man. This is chaos. This is lesbian right here. I'm showing them all. That night, I'm trying to sleep. Oh, no, came back. I couldn't do anything. Man, if I was seeing everything, bombs, everything was coming back. So I called Breck and Jake prayed over me. That's the only way I got over that. But I couldn't see that movie anymore. George said it was on back here a few months ago. I said, no, I can't watch that.
Damn.
I can't watch. That's the only one I cannot watch. Because Oliver Stone, who made that movie, was there. Oliver Stone was there. He was a combat fighter, too.
So that's how he was able to make it so realistic,
because he was there, too. And Raul Reese, is the pastor of in California. He was in the Marines, and he was crazy. He started off like the streets like I did. He was a fighter. He got into martial arts. He got in trouble. The judge told him, you go to prison or go in service. He went to the Marine. They sent him to Vietnam, but Ron Reese was so bad, he disobeyed orders. Yeah, they did kick him out. Yeah. Ron Reese told him he killed the captain, too, right there. Yeah. Of course, Ron Reese was on all in trouble and all that stuff. And now they got him. His testimony is good, too, though, because I had him on the radio back here last year. But he wanted to kill his family. That's... He was sitting in the house because his wife, the same wife he had now, was his high school sweetheart, and Cher. So he was going to kill him. He's had his weapon loaded, waiting for him to come back. And then he said, on that, Chuck Smith came on. And that got him. God used Chuck Smith to save him. He went to Chuck Smith Church and like Greg Laurie on then. There was Calvary Chapel minister. That's, he got to, he was going to blow his wife and sons away.
Yeah, see, because when I was a kid, I didn't know any of this stuff. I heard stories here and there that you used to tell me, but like,
right,
in my mind, I didn't know devastation of war. As a kid, I'm just thinking like, damn, I knew your eyes was messed up, but not as severe as it was. So in my brain, I'm like, damn, my dad's not doing this, this, and this with me, but I didn't understand.
Yeah, I was trying to.
This was the reason why.
Yeah, because it took years later, I started going bad. Because we used to go a lot of places, and I couldn't go anymore. Especially when you would start doing a lot of that basketball, I couldn't keep up. I couldn't see it when you made a shot, something like that. Mm-hmm. But then I knew my eyes going back. I was coming off of 605, and I couldn't read that sign. I shook my head, it got clear again. Further, I got to say that blur again. I said, wait a minute. I got to go. I'm going to the VA. I went to the VA. One doctor looked. He said, man, if I can go to the doctor. I said, no. Three doctors looked into my eyes. Wouldn't tell them nothing further. What's going on? Well, you're going to be totally blind within 30 days. What are you talking about? You got pseudo-retinitis pigmentosa. So you was in combat. I said, yeah. From the outdoors, everybody has been outdoors like that. So what are you talking about? So then I went, Bracken Jay prayed for me again. I went back and said, you know, I know it. God healed me. But then I kept going to the eye doctors and everything. And the rods and the cones in the eyes left. They told me, said, well, there's nothing to be done. I said, well, no problem. I'll deal with it. Then I went back in. Then the cataracts, they took that out. And when I had the cataracts, I couldn't believe it. I'm walking. I couldn't see the television. I said, whoa, I knew I was in bad shape then. So the television screen was all white. But I noticed I got closer to the television. I could see it. And I got close, and I started to sit up close to the TV. Then everything else went, and then the only thing was left now in my eyes is the retina and pressure.
So are they paying you for this?
Yeah, they paid for it. It took a long time. And the thing about it is they always say, well, no, the Vietnam veteran don't get this, don't get this. They lied to us so long. Lie. That's why a lot of guys on Skid Row, they're still lying to them. I didn't trust the VA anymore. Then they stopped having real doctors there, having these people tell you, oh, this and that, no. So then I started going to the real doctors, and they were doing my, that's how the reports they sent in, they helped me get stuff, because they weren't giving me really nothing. And say, well, no, it didn't happen. You're crazy.
That's crazy. So how did you deal with parenting after spending that many years in the military and war, and this all you know your whole life, and now
because I don't know if you remember, my wife used to be catering until March, did a step and everything a lot of time. I was still doing military jump. And then one time, God told me, wait a minute, these are not soldiers, and not even the U.S. Army. You know? I used to go to church calling people, don't fall in or fall out, you know, column left. To the right, rear face, don't try to march. I was doing all that stuff. People say, are you scaring people up? Well, Freedom told me that before he died. That's all. I didn't realize it. Even John told me, you putting people in line and everything. I said, well, hey, man, that's the way he deal with people. You know, I had a heart stone the first one. I got saved. I still had a lot of ways the Lord had to take away from me. I was still mean. I mean, and I'll to the point. Because if I figure you can do something, you don't do it, I'm going to let you know about it.
Yeah.
You no good lady sucker, man. Get out of here with that. You can do it.
Yeah, no excuses.
Like Tom Loren, I deal with now today with Tom Loren.
No.
You know, he's too smart in here. But I didn't realize one time Dorothy was telling me, I was sitting there, Dorothy said, you said I work at Nutsville with some of them people you deal with. They just crazy. I said, you know what? She's right. I never thought about it that way. A lot of people I was dealing with in church were nutty as a fruitcake. And some still are. But I had to, the only way I knew when I got back like this civilian life, I still had military ways. That's all you ever know. I mean, I eat, slept, and dreamed the military.
Yeah, because I'm trying to see when you transitioned into, okay, I'm a dad now.
Oh, that was years late after.
Because I'm still thinking, you're still thinking the military. Now you got this kid and you're like, this is different.
That's what when the Lord started dealing with me. Wait a minute, it's not just me anymore. You know, I got a son I got to take care of and treat right. That's when the changes started. Because everybody else, I used to put him in line. But see, you were special to me. I remember when you were born, I had you like this, one hand. The nurse said, hold one hand. Your hands are huge. And Chris looking at me, blinking in my eyes, head full of hair, blinking in my eyes. That was my man then. He was everything. I mean, I changed a lot of ways then. So before, I was crazy and rough.
Crazy.
Yes, I had to settle down then. I can't let him see. I was drinking. I had to stop that. I was drinking. And then we went to Jack in the Box and John. John was loaded. John kept falling on the car to try to carry John. Then a deputy sheriff turned the corner. Chris started crying. Okay, crack guys, come on. But then I said, nope, I got to stop this drinking too. Ain't had a drink since the Lord took the taste of alcohol away from me. I was mostly drinking beer and wine. But I tell you what, the craziest thing I used to drink back in the early 70s was that doggone Wild Turkey. Man, that stuff was strong.
101 proof?
Yeah, but then I didn't drink the 101.50. I didn't drink the 151. I drank the 101.
101 proof? What
yeah, it? And that stuff was done. I would drink big time. I put it in a glass, man, and drink that down. Yeah, I took that to feel it. But I tell you, I was cool. I used to go to the VFW. And that club was on with veterans of foreign wars. You can't join unless you've been in a war zone. So I was going to the VFW, sitting around, having a good time. I told them, Sergeant Green, Sergeant Green. Yeah, what? Nah, I don't care about you. But that, like I said, I was crazy. I was tourist bull then. I was bullheaded. You couldn't tell me nothing. One time, I put a captain in this place. I said, sir, I respect your rank, but I don't give a stern hoot about you. Nothing. But that one we shot up in Nam, no, he was a racist to the core. That guy's, how do you get it out of unit? I didn't think of that idea. A couple of my buddies did. Let's take him out. What are you talking about? He already don't think it's deal. I think I killed fire. You know, he's a cactus. Okay, yeah, let's do it. We all lit him up. He went down. We had like nothing happened. Then when they had the count come back, oh, Captain so-and-so is killed. Oh, he was? That's good for him. Should be so racist. That's why he's not here.
That's crazy.
But yeah, we killed some of our own people. And we committed so many, well, Dr. King was right. We committed so many war crimes that it was pathetic. It was. Because they weren't doing it to us.
Yeah. You're in survival mode, so you're not thinking rationally. You think I'm trying to survive.
I'm trying to, I knew I had to be here for 13 months, and I know these guys are trying to take me out. So I'm going to get you too. You're trying to get me. And I couldn't. At first, we were losing that war because we didn't know where they were. They were hiding all over the place. And then at daytime, you walking around the peasants. They smiling in your face. At night, they want to cut your throat. So it's war zone. I can sit here and talk about it all day, but you have to be there. You have to experience that. You talk about fear. It's the unknown. You don't know if you're going to come out of it.
And this is somewhere you've never been in your life. Like you said, you don't know the terrain. You don't know where you're going. Nope. You don't know these people. They just dump you in the middle of nowhere and say, go kill.
Yeah, Southeast Asia. We know the war is going on. We know where the war broke. Like I said, JFK, what's going to end it? That's why. That's why he was assassinated. I'm going to be honest about it. They won't tell you the truth, but that's why he was assassinated. People like FBI agent, what his name was? J. Edgar Hoover, a lot of them, and a lot of Republicans. Because JFK had just ended the Cuban crisis. They didn't want that to end. He avoided that war with what's his name over there in Cuba. Then he was going to take us out, get the troops out of Vietnam. The war got worse after he was assassinated. After JFK was assassinated, that's when the war really broke out.
Well, it's big money in war.
Sure.
Make a lot of money.
Think about it. Every war was started with Republican president. Mm-hmm. A lot of Democrats inherited. Just like when Biden ended up, took us out of Afghanistan, the Republicans hated that. But they were making money. And people dying right and left, but their families weren't going, and they weren't going.
Yeah, that never made sense to me when I learned. We would sell weapons to the enemies that's shooting at our troops. How are we selling them weapons and we sending our kids to go fight?
Because that's what they were making money.
Now, that's crazy.
And we got to, like you're talking about Israel, we have to protect Israel. But Israel got a leader that's corrupt. Netanyahu is corrupt like Donald Trump. He the one. When Biden told him what to do, we send weapons over, he used them himself, killing innocent people. That is war crime. That's what Putin does. And he's part of Putin. So they should get him down from there. They're trying to take their democracy away.
That's deep. I mean, how do you feel about the military today compared to
today? I don't care nothing about it today. I don't even tell people I'm a veteran today.
Thanks.
Because that's how I started. When you come to something, an army that was branch, I mean, we were powerful back then. A lot of countries don't respect us anymore. because of the leaders we got. And people like Donald Trump screwed up a lot of things. Overseas, everything. We're not respect. We're not the superpower people think, but we are, though. We got the capability of doing other things, so other countries do, too.
Because I know now we got women in the military. You can get sex changes now. Like, everything is totally different.
You see, that's what I'm saying. We didn't have that. We didn't have. Women came in the military in 79. But all this stuff they're talking about, gay this, and I got to say this, no way. Because if you was in my unit then, if you were a faggot, man, we had a GI party with you. We just killed, but we did a number on you. And they couldn't be in the airborne unit. You had to earn that. Yeah. Everybody didn't make the airborne because the training was so tough and rough. We tell you, you bowled out. You can't make it. And a lot of guys, even infantry, wasn't no women involved in that. The training was so rough. You're running all the time. You had to learn how to die from bullets, man. You learn how to fight, running and shooting and everything. Women can't do that.
Yeah, I disagree.
And then when you, a woman is a woman, let's be honest about it. Yeah. You out there, man, a woman, they have the administrative period. What you going to do? You got flies from drawing around. You drawing the enemy to you. And these people nowadays, like the women's in Iraq, they have to make some rigged thing for them. But any women not fighting, they were in a combat zone. They weren't fighting.
See, they get mad at me when I say women have no business being in the military, going to war, fighting.
Like, they don't.
That's not a woman's job.
If they read the Bible, there's not all the women live stuff started there. There are certain jobs women should not do. And the bottom line, they're not supposed to preach. They're not to get up there and do job men do, because God created man as in his woman is his helper. That's what a woman's job. She can teach children and class and stuff like that. But for getting in and being a leader, no. But the bottom line, military, a woman can't do what you do in the military. I'm telling you. Because, God, man, we had foul mouth. We talked all crazy crap. And they were guys in the military, man. They were so sexually bound. They would build a dog with bricks of a woman. You know, nude woman. That's how crazy they were. They were so sexually driven.
They call them fifis in prison.
And then a lot of guys fooled around with all them. A lot of guys fooled around with all them Vietnamese women, man. Them Vietnamese women was carrying razors in their wounds.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, that was true?
Yeah, that was true. We knew a lot of guys got cut up like that.
Damn.
Man, you
crying.
These people are communists. They are set. They're the ones used for suicide killing.
So they got a vagina full of razor blades. And the soldier go to sleep with them. You sliced up.
See, those, and a lot of it happened to was the white soldiers, I'm telling you. But brothers know better.
Yeah.
But they were so Vietnamese women. Like, I knew one like me, name was Opie. And the thing about it, I lied to her. I told her I was leaving that Friday. Shoot, man, that Thursday, I was gone. I wasn't bringing up when they wanted to come back to the States and they give them all these state women, you don't have them anymore. They don't learn the ways of state.
That's crazy, because that's what's going on now. Yeah. They got this thing called passport bros where the guys are flying to foreign countries to get the women to bring them here.
Yep.
Once they get here and learn the ways of the state and the laws, they're out of here.
That's right. And then, because look at all the Cambodians when they were bringing the refugees over here. They got businesses, they went to school free. But our people wasn't getting anything. None of America was getting them set up. They can set up a business and loans and have to pay back.
So all of that was happening then, because it's happening now. With the illegals that's coming over here, they get the money, the housing, the schooling. And that improved, we get nothing.
Because that way we couldn't figure out why in the world we going to fight a war. These people come to get everything they want. But we can't get nothing. See, that's why I never understood this country. Yeah, we're a land of immigrants. But the people we fought against, you gave them a better life than the old people live here. And let's be honest about it. Black and Hispanic people was always at the bottom of the pole. Always. Housing, everything. And look, Donald Trump used to rent to black and Hispanic people because giving them roach-infested houses and things that he lied about and his dad lied about. That's why they got sued. But there's a lot of racism here about people. Even other states, they didn't have that outblatant racism like these states did, but they had in housing. They had it in jobs.
Systemically?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, look at Nat King Cole. We tried to get home in Beverly Hills. This guy was a great singer. They refused him for a long time. So that's why I said, we go there fighting a war. And you can't get nothing back in the United States. You come back from the States, you're proud, and you treat it like dirt. Like, what the heck I'm going to be fighting for to come back to this crap? I said, I don't blame a lot of them guys that jumped ship and went to Canada. They were better off. But they didn't go after them. They go after ones here that didn't go to Canada that was drafted.
That's crazy.
Now look at people like Lindsey Graham. That clown was an officer, but he nothing but a fag. That's all he is, a fag, a yes man. Never spent a day in combat.
That's crazy.
Only field them up there now. They didn't come because they was over there in Afghanistan. But see, I don't call that no conventional war. I don't. Your non-conventional war is what we were, this guerrilla warfare then. Whereas you, and you have some good comrades with you, but hey, you know, death can come at any time. And a lot of us was young men. We were like 19, 18, 21 years old during that time.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of people died young. Like that guy, the monitor, died over there. He was the lead singer. Made that song, Breathe Little Sam. He was killed. He was drafted. Right in the heart of combat. He was drafted to go in. Everybody got drafted. They're going to give you 6 weeks of training and send you over there to that war zone.
Damn.
It didn't tear. That's why they were getting all young men. But the bottom line is, same thing today.
Yeah, it's a different society today, man. It's crazy. Sometimes I say I wish I was born back then because of how crazy it is now. You got the men thinking they women, the women thinking they men.
Yeah, and see, back then, we call them, when you're coming up, I hate them too, I hate them. Like a man's broken man, we call them a punk back then. One would call a bull daddy. And we used to catch, I mean, big guy like to play for the Rams. Man, my cousin, we used to catch some guy that whooped the daylights out of him. I hated them clown. I think I'm a man, you making me look bad like that, want to be a woman? We'll beat your stuff now. We beat him so bad one time, and took a soda water bottle, jamming up the rim.
Oh, my God.
That's how men were. We're crazy.
Yeah, that was gross.
And then talking about women dressing like men back. See, they call themselves coming out the closet back in the 80s. When Bill Clinton say, ass don't tell. I hated that, man. I was part of that crap. You don't got to come out, man, come on. You can't go in the green ring like that. And then you come and find you can't beat them up nothing anymore either.
No, you can't do nothing now.
Training is totally different. Yeah, it's everything. Man, you do something like that, man, they won't lock you up. You call one of them faggot a day. And that's another thing that gets me about this country now. They can have all their rights, but forget our rights.
Yeah.
You know, they can do what they want to do, but we can't do it. See, that don't make any sense at all.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, give the people a raw, uncut version of how the war was back then and how the vets was looked at from somebody from the inside. Not the media, how they painted to be, not no Hollywood. Real raw and uncut.
And one more thing, too. Like I said, the military back then was the military who policed itself. Didn't have no civilians or new stuff like that. We took care of everything our own. And at that time, you couldn't go on the military base unless your car had a sticker. Like I was an NCO, non-commissioned officer. Sticker on my car had been red. An officer sticker would have been blue. And that's how we used to do back then. They used to have MPs at the gate. They're taking all that away now. You got civilians working on the plane running things. And like I said, there was no women running thing until they came in the military back in 79. I knew then it was going to be bad. Because I told them, buddy, I said, you know what? Hey, man, I'm getting out of this because it's going to be a lot of problems. And sure enough, one black, sorry, he was an E9. I don't know if you guys seen him on the news back there several years ago, where this white female officer wanted to have an affair with him. He was married, and she tried to bring charges up against him. Even though he got out with his full rank and benefit, she wanted him to leave his wife and be with her. She's an ugly thing, because she's being a major. I looked at that woman, man, I wouldn't be with her. But because she's normal, she brought charges, and the charges didn't work. And just like, but you wouldn't know about like Oliver North, they're going to tell Dorothy about Oliver North in the Iran hostage situation, how they put him on because he was a scapegoat. He was a full-bird colonel. But everybody else who did the thing walks away. Just like they're treating Donald Trump now. Mm. Everybody know he's guilty, but they're scared of it, including the courts to me. But the Supreme Court, though, they instead of saying, no, he can't be on the ballot, and he know he going against the, I mean, he took an oath for the country. You stand in that room, all up your hands up, you raise your right hand, you say the same oath we say when you're going in. You plan to protect the United States Constitution, the United States against domestic and foreign. You willing to give your life. You make that oath, and a lot of people don't care about that oath anymore. See, in the old army, you stood up against that, and you would have been prosecuted. Now, they get rid of anything. All these lying suckers get rid of everything. But unless you be color, like I said, if that was Obama, oh, it wouldn't be all the stuff. He'd be getting all the chance. We wouldn't get these chances like that to my delay a trial or appeal this. We'd be under the jail. Yeah, right now. We've been under the jail.
That's deep. So would you have any advice for any young men thinking about joining the military today?
Yeah, I'll tell them, you better think twice. I mean, it's not what you think it is. If you want to go in the service, I'll tell a woman that she go in the Air Force. That's the best one for you. You go in the Army, the Marines, anything else, only no good for you. But I wouldn't give advice to anybody. I'd think about it twice. It's not the same military I was in. The rules have changed. Everything's changed now. Yeah, you're a Marine. If you come in out of college, you go in, you get a good pay, you get paid. When I first went in the military, my pay was just $200 a month. Mm. That was it. $200 a month. Mm. These guys go, they make that pay look sick. They get over $2,500 a month or more. And then they come out, oh, my knee or my back, they get rewarded for that. I can say about I'm hurting like this, well, whatever we can do for you. You're lying, sucker. See, that's just Vietnam veteran. They make the other clowns heroes, but the real hero are the Vietnam veteran. And if you look at that too, the World War II veteran, they don't get recognition. And look how long it took them to give the black soldiers recognition, man, these awards. And then Congress didn't want to give it to them. Look at the Cuskegee pilots. These guys was great.
Yeah, man, we got to get justice for the real vets out there, man. Justice for every vet. We're going to end it on that note. He got a whole lot more stories to tell. We'll come back at you with a part two, but this is real, raw, uncut. If y'all ever questioning why I talk the way I talk, you got a live viewing. Now you see where I get it from. Don't blame me. It's in the bloodline, man, in green jeans.
That's right.
Navarro way. Bang.
Amen to that.